of one's parents and the importance of respect and honoring one's parents becomes very clear. In this instance, we find that the individual who was the father was openly malicious, meaning he said bad things about the imams, and he didn't respect the imams, you know. But despite that, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam tells the son to be patient, and that with difficulty will come ease, and that patience is what will result in that the pious will go to heaven and that they will have the good end. And so here there are some, you know, fine lines that kind of need to be delineated. And one is that if one's parents, God forbid, encourage one to do haram things, to disobey the Almighty Allah, then yes, in that situation it is not allowed to obey one's parents. But in other than that, you should obey your parents. Now, of course, you know, if they ask you to harm yourself, and as we said, they ask you to do something that is haram, if they ask you to do something which is really detrimental to you or yourself, then of course, you know, that you're not supposed to do those things. But, you know, if they tell you to do good things, then you should definitely obey your parents. But even if they tell you other things, you know, or if, God forbid, for some reason they become angry or they reprimand you, you know, or sometimes maybe they're going through a bad day and they say something that might be a little bit hurtful to you, you should not take these things to heart. You should not, you know, be offended by these things. There is a very great position for one's parents and the respect and the love that one has and must have for their parents. And one last thing before we end, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, he said, "I shall not stop praying for you." So this is another thing that we learn, is to constantly, continuously do dua, make prayers, do supplications, ask the Almighty Allah for help in all of our situations, and to never stop asking for help, never stop doing dua, always, always keep that relationship with the Almighty Allah open for the rest of your lives, because that is truly the one relationship which must have the priority. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam. Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Despite the young age of the ninth holy Imam of the Ahl al-Bayt, Imam Muhammad al-Jawad al-Taqi, alayhi afdal al-salatu wa-salam, he rose to excellence and is considered to be one of the individuals that is remembered, honored, and occupies a central position in the remembrance of the family of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings be upon them. Yahya ibn Akhtham is an individual who had many debates with Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Yes, this debate is perhaps not known. Once Yahya said to Imam al-Jawad, and listen to this, what about the hadith that said, Fulan and Fulan, Sayyida kuhuli ahl al-Jannah. Imam al-Jawad looks at him, ajib. You know, I tell you, when we have ana madinatul ilm, وَعَلِيٌّ بَابُهَا. Yes? A narration that all Muslim schools of thought narrate, isn't it? If somebody comes and fabricates and says, Fulan, what? Is the window, and Fulan is the back door. Who enters a house or a city through a window? Except the thief. Who enters other than somebody who's got something to hide? No doubt, isn't it? Yes? Now, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam says to Yahya, what does he say? He says, this is a fabricated hadith. He says, for two reasons. Number one, all Muslims agree, Al-Hasan wal-Husayn, Sayyida Shababi Ahl al-Jannah. No doubt, they are the masters of the youth of paradise, isn't it? But he says, don't we all agree that there will not be elderly people? Because the hadith, according to this particular individual, Yahya says, this particular hadith says that Fulan and Fulan, the first and the second, are what? Are the masters of the elderly, of the people of paradise. He said, we are those who believe in Islam, that every individual is raised on the day of Qiyamah in Jannah as a youth, as a shab. Therefore, there is no individual in Jannah who is elderly. Imam al-Jawad dispels so many of these myths, so many of these misconceptions.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight. A recent survey conducted by the United States' central bank shows that the country's record high inflation has eroded a sense of financial security among American households. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The BNN Bloomberg television channel has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen stated that the risk of a U.S. recession is still a possibility, claiming that it is normal for economic growth to moderate. However, Janet Yellen expressed concern over persistently high inflation. Yellen said she remains cautious about inflation levels and claims there is a path to bring it down while maintaining a robust labor market. Recalling that President Joe Biden had earlier expressed optimism in avoiding a recession, but economists and analysts foresee a baseline scenario for a U.S. recession towards the end of 2023. The focus remains on inflation as a key measure of underlying price pressures continues to exceed the Federal Reserve's target. While officials claim inflation in the United States is expected to soften in June, a crucial measure of underlying price pressures continues to remain elevated, keeping the Federal Reserve inclined towards resuming interest rate hikes. As the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, is projected to increase, stripping out volatile energy and food costs, reveals core CPI rising above the U.S. Federal Reserve's desired level. The Federal Bank of Chicago president, Austin Goolsbee, claimed that policymakers are aiming to manage price growth effectively without triggering a recession, with one or two more interest rate hikes anticipated this year. Janet Yellen's visit to Beijing over the weekend aimed at purportedly fostering bilateral relations and addressing ongoing tensions between the United States and China. Talks with Chinese counterparts focused on establishing a more stable foundation for cooperation. While discussing outbound investments and restrictions, Janet Yellen claimed that any additional controls will be narrowly targeted and not significantly impact bilateral investments with China. She also raised concerns over China's recent export restrictions on metals crucial to the chip-making industry, seeking channels of communication to address these issues. In the meantime, the U.S. economy continues to face various macroeconomic challenges. Janet Yellen's comments reflect a cautious stance on the economic outlook and the need for strategic policy decisions. According to experts, the U.S. Federal Reserve's upcoming policy decision in July will play a crucial role in addressing economic problems and determining the path for interest rate hikes. As the United States navigates through these uncertainties, discussions on monetary policy and global economic cooperation remain vital. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. A new survey conducted by the United States Central Bank shows that the country's record-high inflation has eroded a sense of financial security among American households. The U.S. Federal Reserve published the results of its annual study recently, which sought to shed light on the impact of the country's high inflation rate on Americans' confidence in their economic security. The survey found that although the U.S.'s inflation rate has tumbled compared to last summer's 40-year high of 9.1%, it has greatly reduced American households' trust in the country's financial capability. Responding to the study, many said they had been forced to either tap into their savings to handle the economic downturn or opt for buying cheaper products. According to the survey, the share of U.S. adults reporting that they were doing at least okay financially in 2022 decreased by 5 percentage points, registering the steepest fall since the survey was launched a decade ago. At the other end of the scale, the share of those saying they were worse off shot up 15% to 35%, the highest level by far since the U.S. Federal Reserve first started asking that question in 2014. 54% of American adults said their budgets had been affected a lot by price increases, with parents of children under the age of 18, Black and Latin American adults and people with disabilities ranking among the most likely to report an impact from inflation. Overall, one-third of American households cited inflation as their main financial challenge, up more than fourfold compared to 2016. The survey, which recorded the responses of more than 11,000 people, also showed that few Americans reported being able to cover an unexpected $400 expense using cash, savings, or a credit card that could be immediately paid off. The bleak report came after a late March study showed that the United States is poised to enter a recession this year and face high inflation well into 2024. More than two-thirds of respondents to the National Association for Business Economics survey saw inflation remaining above 4% in the United States at the end of the year. It came after the U.S. Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 4.75 percentage points in a bid to tackle soaring inflation in the country, which touched a record level last year amid the collapse of several major American banks. Silvergate Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and First Republic Bank all crashed within a couple of weeks of each other, plunging the financial markets into turmoil. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. An unprecedented level of debt has plunged average American into a dire economic straits, adding to the hardships of citizens trying to make ends meet amid soaring inflation. The Hill reported recently that a typical American household now carries $10,000 in credit card debt, raising America's credit card balance to the tune of $1 trillion. At 24% average interest rate on a new credit card and monthly payments of $250, it will take households until 2030 to pay off their debt, while spending a total of $20,300, twice what was spent. According to the U.S. Federal Reserve, U.S. credit and debt stands at $986 billion, showing an increase of $250 billion in 2 years. Other sources calculate a higher debt in the United States. WalletHub reported $1.2 trillion debt at the end of 2022. A new survey conducted by the United States' central bank shows the country's record-high inflation has eroded the sense of financial security within American households. In 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic reached its peak as a global pandemic, forcing the government to limit people's movement in cities and countries around the globe. Gradually, movement restrictions were removed and spending picked up and savings slowed down. At the same time, the U.S. Federal Reserve commenced an unprecedented campaign of interest rate hikes while the inflation rate was soaring to record levels. In the fourth quarter of 2022, credit card debt rose by $86 billion, indicating the largest increase on record. Overall, one-third of American households cite inflation as their current main financial challenge. This shows an increase of more than 400% compared to 2016. In the meantime, the United States has imposed unprecedented economic sanctions against Russia while supplying heavy weaponry to Kiev to wage war against Russian troops. Analysts cite the heavy burden imposed by Congress giving tens of billions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer money to Kiev to fight Russia as one of the main sources of increased poverty in the United States.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
از امام صادق علیه السلام فرمود که اذا مات المؤمن دخل معه فی قبره سته.
In a thoughtful hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, we read, when a believer is put into the grave, six intermediate forms display themselves to the soul of the deceased one. Each of these six forms stands by one side of the believer. These sides are up, down, left, right, front and back. The backside is Hajj. In other words, Hajj will stop the dangers that will come to someone from backside. Now, according to many traditions, the main dangers that befall someone from backside are the deeds of one's offspring and property. property and children are the two important things that we leave behind. Doing Hajj will protect us against the negative effects of these two.
از پایین پا خطراتی که متوجه آدم میشه احسان و خوبی هایی که به مردم پایین پا بدونید کجاست.
The downside refers to the dangers that come to you from under your feet. It precisely refers to the earth and the materialistic world. The intermediate form down your feet in the other world is your kindness and benevolence to the people. In other words, your benevolence and kindness towards others will stop the dangers and hardships that come from earth or materialistic world, like financial and economic problems. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Iranian President Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi has begun a three-nation visit to sub-Saharan Africa recently for the first trip in 11 years by an Iranian president, aimed at increasing Iran's footprints in a region with an economy of $600 billion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Kayhan International wrote, Africa, as part of the old world, has had neighborly ties since time immemorial with Eurasia, actually one vast landmass that could be and not two continents, with which it is connected with Asia and by the Sinai Peninsula, and narrowly separated from Europe by the Strait of Gibraltar. This means Iranians and Africans, whether the lighter-skinned northerners or the darker-skinned sub-Saharan southerners, are no strangers to each other and have traded since prehistoric times. The crafty British, followed by the Americans, as part of their divide-and-rule policy, tried to drive a racist wedge between nations, but with the triumph of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iran removed all the superficial barriers and embarked on renewal of relations with African people. The present leader of the Islamic Revolution during his 2 4-year terms as the Iranian president in 1981 to 1989, in those crucial years of the 8-year war imposed by the US through Saddam of the repressive Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad, found time to pay 6 state visits to African countries. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei visited Zimbabwe twice, once for the summit of the non-aligned movement in Harare in January 1986, and again in September of the same year on exclusive state visit. The policy of strengthening Iran-Africa ties continued during the terms of the next 3 presidents, including 8 state visits twice to Sudan, 10 state visits and 23 state visits, including thrice to Senegal and twice to Sudan, Algeria and Gambia. President Sayed Ebrahim Raisi has embarked on his maiden trip to Africa after an unexplained 12-year drought of Iranian presidential visits to the so-called Dark Continent. His visit to Kenya breaks a 14-year absence of any Iranian presidential visit to Nairobi, and a 13-year absence in case of Uganda and Zimbabwe. This, however, does not mean there was a rupture of ties. Definitely not, as is evident by the frequent exchange of top-level visits between Iran and the various African countries, including the Northern Arabic-speaking states, by Iran's foreign affairs and other ministers. The Islamic Republic of Iran enjoys cordial ties with all African people, whether Muslims or Christians, and is eagerly looking for a share in the $600 billion annual economy of sub-Saharan Africa. At the same time, Iran strives to develop relations with the Arab states of North Africa, as could be discerned by President Raisi's recent meetings in Tehran with the Algerian foreign minister and the first ever ambassador of Libya after a 12-year gap, amidst reports of renewal of diplomatic relations with Egypt and Morocco. Al Jazeera English also reflected the Iranian president's African tour, writing, "Recently, Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani told the reporters that Africa was a continent of opportunities that wants to engage with Iran and Tehran is eager to reciprocate. He said, "We can describe this trip as a new starting point to have a surge in economic and trade ties alongside boosting political and cultural relations with countries on this continent." Al Jazeera English continued, "In March, Raisi hosted a meeting with a group of representatives from West Asia. In March, Raisi hosted a meeting with a group of representatives from West Africa, in which he pitched Iran as a different kind of partner when compared with countries in the West with colonial histories on the continent. He said, "The expansion of the Islamic Republic of Iran's relations with Africa is not with an eye towards the wealth of this region, but with the goal of progress and welfare for all nations." The trip comes a month after Raisi embarked on a tour of Latin America, where he signed a host of agreements to boost ties with fellow U.S.-sanctioned allies, Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua. Tehran has been looking to diversify its relations since the United States unilaterally abandoned the nuclear deal with Iran in 2018.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, patience with our parents. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear friends, it's such an honor to be here at your service. We are talking about patience with our parents. Now, of course, we know that patience is something which is incredibly important. It is something that helps us to grow both spiritually and mentally. Now, of course, without patience, it will be incredibly difficult to be able to pass the different trials and tribulations and the different tests that come about in our lives. Most of the time, though, this is what our concept of patience is. But very rarely do we think about the kind of patience that we need in the relationships that we have in our life. And so one of the kinds of patience that we must show as regards to the relationships that we have in our life is patience with our parents. Now, of course, this is something that is recommended to such a great extent in the Holy Quran and in the teachings of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, and the infallible Imams, alayhim as-salam. And the Holy Quran gives a very high status and a very high position for one's parents. And so we must try our best to not only respect our parents, but if, God forbid, some kind of difference occurs, if there is something that might bother us about our parents, it is absolutely necessary to be patient and to have patience with our parents. So welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB. We are talking about patience with our parents. You know, what's unfortunate is that some of us, we have patience with everybody else that is around us. We might have patience with our coworkers. We might have patience with our friends. And we have patience with the various different relationships that we have. Now, patience, of course, you know, it can be in the face of various different things. Sometimes you have a friend and you don't like a certain personality, characteristic, or a kind of an attribute of that individual. But what do you do? Well, you kind of stay patient and you put up with it, if you will. Now, when it comes to our parents, though, we seem to show a certain kind of impatience. We very easily and very quickly get frustrated. You know, we very easily fall into arguments with our parents. We have disagreements which are out of control and out of proportion when it comes to our parents. But when it comes to an Islamic lifestyle, we have to remember that patience with our parents, forbearance and mercy with our parents, and of course, to look the other way, if you will, if there is something that bothers us about our parents. And so a beautiful teaching about Islamic lifestyle, and that is that one must be patient with their parents.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Zionist regime's massive operation in the West Bank refugee camp resembles its strategy of mowing the lawn with Gaza bombings. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote, recently Palestinians in the occupied West Bank witnessed the bloodiest and most violent Israeli regime military operation in recent memory. Over the course of 48 hours, Israeli regime land and air forces besieged the Jenin refugee camp in the northern West Bank, killed at least 12 Palestinians and wounded over 100 others. For the first time since the Second Intifada in 2002, the people of Jenin refugee camp came under heavy aerial bombardment and witnessed Israeli regime bulldozers wreak mass destruction on the roads and infrastructure. While the city of Jenin, and the camp in particular, have been the subject of countless Israeli regime army raids over the past year, targeting Palestinian resistance groups, the events of the past few weeks have witnessed a clear change in the Zionist regime's military strategy in the city. On June 19th, Israeli regime forces deployed helicopters during a deadly raid on the camp and fired rockets towards a building in the refugee camp, marking the first use of helicopters in Jenin in more than 20 years. Just 2 days later, on the 21st of June, three Palestinian resistance fighters were assassinated in a targeted airstrike on their vehicle outside Jenin. At the time, the use of helicopters and drone strikes caused alarm among Palestinians in Jenin, who feared it could mark a return to the Zionist regime's military tactics of the Second Intifada and the 2002 Battle of Jenin, when more than 50 Palestinians were killed inside the camp. Just over 2 weeks later, on Monday, July 3rd, the camp's fears were realized. Over the course of the two-day invasion, the Israeli regime deployed everything from helicopters, drones, bulldozers, and thousands of ground troops. Residents also reported electricity and water outages. Those the Zionist regime's army have tried to downplay the scale of the operation, the most recent raid marked a clear departure in the Zionist regime's military strategy when it comes to raiding West Bank cities like Jenin, which usually features raids that last a few hours and are conducted by special forces on the ground. Many Palestinians and political analysts liken the events of the past few days to the way Israel operates in Gaza. A total siege, the constant humming of drones and using airstrikes as its primary mode of destruction and killing. The fabricated regime of Israel has made it clear that this is not the end of its operations in Jenin, with Israeli media saying the next raid could happen in as little as just a few days. So, is the Zionist regime moving towards a Gaza-type model in Jenin? And what will future raids look like in the city? You've likely heard the term mowing the lawn or mowing the grass, most commonly associated with the Zionist regime's military strategy in the Gaza Strip. The idea is that every few years or month, the Zionist regime weeds out the growing capabilities of Palestinian resistance groups in the Strip. When military capabilities of groups like Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad are viewed as becoming too strong, or in many cases, the Zionist regime needs to score a political win, it goes into Gaza, drops some bombs, and mows the lawn. What was most clearly demonstrated this week is the fact that the Zionist regime is drastically changing its military approach in Jenin and the West Bank, returning to a style of warfare previously used in the Second Intifada. What is happening in Jenin could be understood as the Gazaification of the Zionist regime's military approach to dealing with the resistance in the city. Gaza has been turned into a Bantustan, with the Zionist regime using various systems of blockades and siege, making sure to keep the people in cages and controlling everything that goes in and out of the strip. When the Zionist regime feels that the military factions in Gaza are pushing the boundaries too much, the army conducts airstrikes or invades. The airstrikes in Jenin shows the extent to which the Israeli regime military is seeing Gaza as the model. The Israeli regime is asking itself, how do we create little Gazans in the West Bank? This process can also be seen in the way the Israeli regime officials and the media are talking about Jenin, by using terms like the city of refugee for terrorists, as they claim, and a hotbed of terror, as Israelis claim. The Zionist regime is actively demonizing Jenin in the public consciousness as a justification for its current and future invasions and for the bombing and targeting of densely populated civilian areas like the refugee camp. It's the same tactics that have been used to demonize Gaza for years. According to Middle East Monitor, the deadly Israeli regime invasion of Jenin on July 3rd was not a surprise. Also, unsurprising is the fact that the killing of at least 12 Palestinians, wounding 120 more, and the destruction of nearly 80% of the Jenin refugee camps, homes, and infrastructure will not make an iota of a difference. Even the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, despite his lofty promises of destroying the safe haven of the enclave in Jenin, must have known that his bloody exercise was ultimately futile. Indeed, as the Israeli regime military machine was toppling homes, smashing cars, and harvesting lives, several Palestinian retaliatory attacks were reported, including in Tel Aviv on July 4th and in the Kedumim illegal settlement on July 6th. In fact, unlike the Israeli regime response to the second Palestinian uprising or Intifada of 2000, extreme violence will not weaken but heighten Palestinian resistance and counter the Zionist regime's attacks.
Nairobi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran on the occasion of Eid al-Ghadir. The enemies cannot change the mentality of the people towards the Islamic Republic. What can make them change their mentality towards the Islamic Republic? What can turn the hearts of Muslims away from the Iranian nation and the Islamic Republic? Discord and religious prejudice can turn the hearts of Muslims away from the Islamic Republic. This is what you should be vigilant about. Everyone shoulders a responsibility in this regard, writing books against Shias or Sunni Muslims or slandering the followers of other denominations will not cause any Shia or Sunni Muslims to convert to other denominations. Those who like to attract all Muslims to the Prophet's household should know that no one can be convinced to convert Shia Muslims by means of slandering or fomenting discord. Such acts will only result in enmity and conflict among Muslims. And this is exactly what the U.S. and the Zionists are looking for. Their efforts are all aimed at fomenting discord among Muslims.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You see today that there are televised debates between Shia and Sunni Muslims in some non-Muslim European countries. They usually invite both Shia and Sunni Muslims to such programs and ask them to have a debate. What is the purpose behind these programs? Why would a Christian country, a colonialist country with an unenviable historical record, provoke a debate between Shia and Sunni Muslims? Are they after the truth? Are they after revealing the truth to their viewers? Or are they after fanning the flames of discord between Shia and Sunni? We should be vigilant about these facts and act wisely in this regard. Shia beliefs are based on a strong logic. There is a strong reasoning behind what the Shia ulama and intellectuals say in regard to Shia beliefs. But this does not give Shia Muslims the right to insult and slander Sunni Muslims. I have been informed that there are some centers which provide the funds for Shia and Sunni Muslims to publish insulting books against one another. In some cases, the funds are provided by the same center. Is this not a warning? You should be careful in this regard.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me.
In the limelight.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned an economic downturn in the United States cannot be ruled out yet. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned that the economy is still at risk of a recession, while expressing concern over persistently high inflation in the U.S. In an interview with CBS show Face the Nation over the weekend, she said it's appropriate and normal for growth to be low. When asked about a potential recession following the June jobs report, which was the weakest since December 2020, and showed that the U.S. economy was adding fewer jobs than in previous months, Yellen said it's not completely off the table. U.S. inflation has begun to ease. It was still high after prices rose 4% year over year in May, double the U.S. Federal Reserve's 2% target, the Treasury Secretary noted. For months, the Federal Reserve has attempted to restrain inflation by hiking interest rates to their highest level in decades, slowing economic growth and prompting fears of a recession. Last month, the central bank decided not to raise interest rates further, but signaled that more rate hikes this year were possible, saying last week that a recession in 2023 is quite likely, but probably won't be deep or prolonged. According to Forbes, rising interest rates, high inflation, an inverted yield curve, and an unexpected banking crisis have all been cited as reasons that a recession could be imminent in the United States. The New York Fed recession probability indicator suggests there is a 68.2% chance of a U.S. recession sometime in the next 12 months. That's the highest reading in more than four decades. Other reliable economic indicators are flashing warning signs that the U.S. economy could soon be rolling over. The most recent core personal consumption expenditures price index data showed that this key measure of U.S. inflation was up 4.6% from a year ago. While it's down significantly from peak 2022 levels, core PCE remains well above the Fed's long-term target of 2%. That latter point is why the Fed has raised the federal funds target rate range by 5% since March 2022. But while raising rates can help lower inflation, the higher they go, the more expensive it becomes for U.S. companies to invest in innovation and growth. In addition, higher rates increase the cost of loans for regular Americans. Credit card balances, mortgage loans, and auto loans are more expensive, reducing the disposable income people have to spend, weighing on corporate earnings and stock prices. Analysts are expecting S&P 500 companies to report a 6.3% year-over-year earnings decline in the second quarter, the third consecutive quarter of negative earnings growth. The banking crisis in the U.S. has further tightened credit markets, reducing banks' willingness to lend to corporations and consumers. According to Forbes, one warning sign of a U.S. recession has been flashing for investors since mid-2022. The yield on two-year U.S. Treasury notes jumped above the yields on 10-year Treasury notes, a phenomenon known as a yield curve inversion. Inverted yield curves have historically been a strong economic recession indicator. Historically, two-thirds of the time the yield curve has inverted, the U.S. economy has fallen into a recession within 18 months. The last time the yield curve inverted was in late 2019, just a few months prior to the COVID-19 recession. In early 2023, the yield curve inverted to its deepest level since 1981. CNBC also reported it has been well reported that an economic downturn could be coming to the U.S. But the question is, when might a recession happen and how bad could it be? Many Americans fear an economic downturn could be as bad as the 2007 to 2009 financial crisis, a recent nationwide survey of 2,000 adults has found. To that point, 68% are expecting a recession in the next 6 months, and 80% of those respondents expect it to be severe.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol traveled to Vilnius, Lithuania to participate in his second NATO summit as he seeks the bloc support in deterring North Korea.
As Secretary General Stoltenberg has mentioned, we are in the situation where the security in the Atlantic cannot be separated from the security in the Indo-Pacific region.
NATO has requested South Korea send military aid to Ukraine. And while Seoul has restricted its assistance to non-lethal aid, NATO maintains interest in South Korea taking a greater role in the pact.
Nuclear and missile programs of North Korea. This affects all NATO allies and underlines the importance of all those who believe in the rules-based order to stand together.
South Korea signed an 11-point cooperation agreement with NATO on the first day of the Vilnius summit. South Korea's President Yoon has sought to strengthen the country's alliance with the United States since coming to office in May of 2022. But now his efforts to boost defense ties and up the pressure on North Korea take on new dimensions with South Korea's cooperation agreement with NATO. However, in South Korea, the Yoon government's moves to court NATO